I'm Richard Lloyd-Jones, and this is Thinking with Somebody Else's Head. Broach the subject of corruption with most people, and there's an almost instant reaction. We understandably get apoplectic about the cases of corruption evident in corporations like BP or rogue traders like Nick Leeson. I remember some self-righteous media pundits lamenting the blow to professional baseball represented by Pete Rose betting on baseball. We all get irate when facing these levels of unethical behavior, or even when a loved one betrays our trust. But this is when it would be timely to remember Shakespeare's counsel in moments of self-righteous indignation: "Methinks you doth protest too much." It's well known in psychology that we can often tee off on behavior outside that we also partake in, and that could be a tough pill to swallow. It takes all the honesty and virtue we can muster to see that external conduct is a mirror reflecting back our own sins. But it's exactly this that's required of us today, because one thing we must admit: if the world has gone astray, chances are pretty good we've contributed to that. A cure for corruption today on Thinking with Somebody Else's Head. Our Stop Radio Network is expanding now, along with many episodes of Thinking with Somebody Else's Head. We're also featuring new shows by Gilbert Gambucci, Analyzing the 1%. It's a look at the pathology of power, and boy, is that ever relevant in today's age. And Susan Berkley's program, The Conscious Company. We also have a lot of my favorite episodes of Healing Through Consciousness, the amazing call-in psychological show I did with Dr. Claudia Bernhardt-Pacheco a few years ago. Those shows really do something special. They inject a healthy dose of sanity, I think, into the psychological call-in show genre. And you know, I would love to do some more of those kinds of shows. So if you've got particular issues or problems that you would like us to address in our programs here with Claudia Bernhardt-Pacheco, that would be wonderful. We can do that a couple of ways. We can still take calls through Skype. I just have to set it up and get the timing organized between your schedule, my schedule, and Claudia's schedule, which might be a bigger challenge than we think. But we can also do this through email. You know, you send us the particular problem or issue that you're dealing with a few details, and we can even treat that anonymously in our programs. My email is jones@stop.org. .br. Be wonderful to hear from you if you're interested in that, any kind of help. Remember that anything you deal with here on the show, any problems that you have, are going to help a lot of other people who have similar difficulties to deal with. Norberto Kepi's science applied to psychoanalysis is often mind-blowing because it helps people have insights about long-standing issues or problems that no other psychological method permits. Consider it like dedicating our pathology to science, if you want to participate in that way. Once again, my email, jones@stop.org.br. Well, I was watching a TED Talks debate on the pros and cons of nuclear energy the other day, and once again marveling at the naivety of the pro-nuclear energy side. In this debate, argued by Stuart Brand, the creator of the Whole Earth Catalog, his surprising to some endorsement of nuclear energy revolved around the assertion that it's safe technology. Those who know the most about it are worried the least, is how he put it. He then went on to put forward the standard argument of the pro-nuke lobby that it's cleaner and less polluting than the alternatives of coal and other carbon-producing energy sources. And this clincher, of course, that it's safe, well, that those who know the most about it are the least afraid. Yeah, because they're psychotic. This is psychotic thinking. First, if our best option for sustainability is splitting an atom to produce energy that leaves a residue that's mortally toxic for thousands of years, if that's our option, I'd say we have a serious problem beyond the debate over coal or nuclear. Both of them suck, actually. And it's ridiculous, really, to enter into a debate of the positives and negatives of each and hope to end up with a, well, this is the best of a bad bunch option. Man, as far as nuclear energy goes, this process leaves toxic waste. And sooner or later, somewhere, somehow, sometime, that gets out. And when it does, the result is not soft, supple, creamy, smooth skin, let me tell you. This discussion on nuclear energy needs to be conducted now in light of the devastation of Fukushima. Love to hear what the "nuclear reactors are perfectly safe" crowd says to that. Although, of course, we both know they'll have some justification about this was an exception and this could never happen here, that kind of thing. A nuclear reactor is a toxic bomb that could explode at any time because of catastrophes or sabotage or corporate cost-cutting on safety measures or just plain old human error. What are we doing messing with these things? Fukushima should be scaring the bejesus out of us. I don't know if you've been following this lately, but the nuclear fuel rods in reactor 4 at Fukushima, 2,000 to 3,000 of them, are sitting inside a pool of water. And that pool of water is the only thing that's preventing them from melting down completely. But now reactor 4 is kind of leaning and in danger of complete collapse. If that happens, which possibly even a small earthquake could cause it to do, and the reactors or the fuel rods become exposed to the air, look out, particularly in the Northern Hemisphere. These fuel rods are shockingly in open air with only water to cover them. That's a lot of nuclear reactors sitting up there. If that water drains away, that's a radiological fire. They're talking 85 times more cesium-137 than Chernobyl. And my country, in the face of all this, in all of its infinite wisdom, my country, Canada, has turned off the radiation sensors throughout its nuclear monitoring network. They refuse to radiation test milk, one of the first places where you can notice spikes in radiation levels. And recently, former Japanese ambassador to Switzerland, Mitsuhide Murata, writing to the UN Secretary General, said, "It's no exaggeration to say that the fate of Japan and the whole world depends on reactor number 4. So this is a phenomenal thing to consider, and maybe we could introduce Kepi's disinversion of physics here. This would be very useful for the pro and anti-nuclear arguers to understand today. Kepi's disinversion of physics is a phenomenal thing. What he says is that energy, rightly, doesn't come from matter. See, this is the essence of the problem, right? We're trying to extract energy from all this material, coal or gas or even water, even solar power, and now splitting the atom. So the problem exists here. Energy, as Kepi defines it, has not been properly understood. And I would heartily recommend some deep reading of Kepi's new physics to start to grasp the significance for our technological philosophy on planet Earth of Kepi's discoveries. The full book's on our site at healingthroughconsciousness.com. I've also posted some excerpts on my Scribd account at pt.scribd.com/richjonesvoice. You'll find some interesting excerpts there that will give you just a taste of his work, and then you can go deeper if that's what you like to do. Because, you know, if we are in fact a planet driven by psychotics, which it appears we are, especially when you enter into these arguments defending current industrial political policy, and if we follow that blindly, then this needs to be called for what it is, collective psychosis. Let's try to find a cure for this today. Dr. Claudia Bernhardt-Pacheco and Curing Corruption, when Thinking with Somebody Else's Head continues in just a moment on the Stop Radio Network. Our program on the Stop Radio Network, our flagship program really, our main program here, is Thinking with Somebody Else's Head, a program name that developed as I was first in Brazil talking with Cesar Sauce, my dear friend. And we were talking about how human beings have philosophies of life, ways of looking at the world that they never really question. And this is an idea that I've had for some time, because in my quest, my search for consciousness, for understanding how things work, I realized that I had views about the world, and many people had views about the world that came from their culture or their family or their institutions or their just their general ways of thinking that they never questioned. And Cesar was telling me how we as human beings, many of these ideas that we have, these philosophies of life, they come from other philosophers or other thinkers. And so really, we're thinking with somebody else's head without perceiving it. And this, of course, is very much the subject of what we do. Claudia Bernhardt-Pacheco has joined me again today to talk, to try to
Maybe.
Penetrate those.
And maybe one day we will be able to think with God's some head. Of God's ideas. Yeah. And that's what we do, in fact.
Yeah.
That's what we do. Even the geniuses, they think with God's head. And this is wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
What an infinite mind, Ooh. My God.
Our problem is that we distort the thinking that we receive from God, right?
Yeah.
We receive something true, and then we say, well, I don't know about that. That's a kind of a... And we adjust or adapt or... And this is the big problem in our world. Well, we've been talking the last couple of times about leadership, and something that's been fascinating to me, Claudia, I wanted to just fill you in on what kind of an impact this is having, our discussions, in the classes that I do and the students that I work with. We were talking about... universals. I was talking about this with a student just yesterday, French student. They're always interesting to talk with French people because they have this social view very well developed.
They are very much socially oriented.
Yeah.
On the contrary of the Germans that are more inner oriented. They have a more introspective mentality, the Germans, or
right.
the German language.
Right.
But the French, they are very much social-oriented.
Yeah, they see the problem as being a...
They study society much more than the other peoples do generally.
So we were talking about this idea that you put forward in our last program about how good leaders... try to keep the group in harmony with these elevated principles of goodness, truth, and beauty. And he was saying, well, yeah, okay, I sort of understand that, but what about the cultural differences? He was saying that some people, like, for example, that we were talking last week about this guy on the beach selling pirated DVDs and making money, and you were bringing a very Christian aspect to this, saying, but this guy's trying to make a living in a system that's totally corrupted, full of laws that are corrupted, and how can this be something that's bad? And my student was saying that here in Brazil, people use this corruption in business that, as a way to do business, like to pay the guy who's doing fiscalization, as you call it, the sort of the overview, the oversight into the way business is done. They'll pay this guy a little bit of extra money, and then that he just goes away. And he was using this as an example of how you can't run business like that. So he was saying, well, what about this kind of thing? There are universal values, sure, but in practice, it's not like that. And I really wanted to bring this up with you because, of course, I see that there's what he's talking about is a very, it's like a spurious argument, you know, because it's not exactly this way. We have a system that is corrupted. And so inside this corrupted system, there are people who do sort of corrupt actions that we could, and we can't focus on that. We have to focus on this bigger picture that we're very far away from the truth of who we are.
But if the powerful, if the directors, they are corrupt and they create the corruptions in law, the laws are corrupt. So everything that depends on them or on that system and this culture is corrupted. But there is a big mistake going on in here,
yes,
Richard. Which is generally people tend to think, and especially Brazilians, they tend to think that Brazil is more corrupt than other countries. And that's what I have been listening, and I'm very upset because, not because I agree with corruption, but here in Brazil, they do a kind of corruption which is smaller and more like at open.
Kind of primitive in a way,
primitive,
isn't it?
Yes. And in
paying
the
some guy
first
50
world
to...
countries where they really create the big corruptions that lead the other countries, the so-called developing or underdeveloped countries depend on. So this is what creates the big trouble. Because, you see... In United States, in Europe, these large countries, they dictate the rules of the world. And what have we seen so far? We have seen rules being dictated to protect pharmaceutical industries, medical industry, arm military industry, arms, oil, which is very much polluting the planet. We see agrotoxics, agrotoxics.
Toxic
killing
pesticides,
people.
Killing people. Killing the infrastructure, the environment, the birds, the insects.
The technology is totally upside down, creating diseases, electronics, computers. This is against human health. So these people are creating the biggest troubles of all. They take care or they control the agro industry, and they put transgenics in this. So they pay these corrupt politicians in Brazil, in Africa, so they can use our sources and resources and land to perform their crimes. This is criminal because these people that plant, that lead, or they organize these plantations with so much toxics and poison, and they poison thousands and millions of people. And the vaccines and all this is more than immoral.
And this comes from the first world, the developed world, totally.
Yeah, those who project onto us their corruption, because they are very much corrupt. And like a person or a country that denies the existence of God, of a creator, they are absolutely corrupt.
Yeah.
They are the totally schizophrenic, theomaniac people that are envious even from God and they create at the side of the natural laws and universal laws, they create their own kingdom and laws that they want to perform to attack humanity, to destroy humanity, to use, to enslave humanity. This is the true corruption.
And this is a corruption that goes much deeper than how we normally think of corruption. We think of corruption as this little thing of a guy taking
$50. And what about drugs?
$50.
And what about drugs? They don't legalize drugs for what purpose? Because they want to continue doing the trafficking. And the traffickers are high-level powerful people.
As you explored in your book in the 1990s, the American drug multinational, you explored very closely this.
So that's why they don't legalize drugs, because otherwise it would come to the surface, it would be legalized, states would take care of the taxes and everything, so it would
come out of being secret. It would not be secret anymore. Yeah. I want to use one example to illustrate what you're talking about, because I know when I have conversations with my friends in Canada, too, they don't see this corruption that you're talking about, Claudia, because they think of corruption as somebody taking $100 to...
They are corrupting their minds. They are corrupting their eyes, their vision, their consciousness. They are corrupting knowledge. This is the first biggest form of corruption. Corruption of knowledge, corruption of ethics. Because if they see so many people dying of hunger and starvation, thirst, and many other ways of dying, these people that don't know how to take care of themselves, and they do nothing and they help them to be killed, this is corruption.
This enormous vaccination campaign that's going around the world, especially in Africa now, is a real corruption of health. You know, there's a film that was done fairly recently called Contagion. Big budget film with Matt Damon and I'm trying to remember the director's name now. Can't remember, but big cast in this. Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, huge, well-known actors. And this movie was showing the spread of a virus through things like a mother's hugs and, you know, these kinds of contact that people would have, showing this kind of very spurious examples of the spreading of a disease and the necessity for a vaccine in order to fight against this. And I was thinking about this. This came shortly after the swine flu fiasco that happened around the world. It was no kind of epidemic at all, even though the World Health Organization was trying to present it as such. Here they are creating this movie, Claudia, directly to sell the efficiency of vaccines again. It was a movie to sell vaccines to the American public, not just the American public, the world public. This is a big corruption. Enormously corrupt.
And it involves movie directors, movie actors, producers. It involves everybody. And the money invested, and in the investors. A thing, Richard, that is presently one of the biggest corruptions of all is Wall Street, is making money from money, is this the interests and the banking system. This is more than immoral, and this is performed mostly by the first world countries. And they can't blame anymore the third world debts for this, as they used to do. So we now are speaking about real demons, the real devils who are behind all of this.
Yeah. This corruption is so interesting. Dr. Kippy first began to explore this, I guess, in his book Liberation Through Knowledge, where he began to explore the corruption of knowledge that you talked about, how we have closed our eyes to the truth. And this is the point I think I was trying to make with my student, that these principles, goodness, truth, and beauty, it's something universal. It's not a cultural thing. It's a universal value that everybody has inside them. And when we don't give value to that, when we allow our societies, and I'm speaking from as a first world so-called person, we are directly responsible for the world that we've created, for the mess that we see in the world today, because that has come primarily from the developed countries, hasn't it?
Of course, yeah. Of course.
So we are responsible for this world in an enormously serious way that we never really think about or understand.
Now, people think, what is the solution? What can be done?
Yeah.
And this is the big question mark situation. And the other day I was reading my book, The Secret History of Brazil.
God, it's beautiful. Claudia, before you do that, let me take a quick break, because you're going to launch into a very important idea. So we are on the Stop Radio Network. The program is Thinking with Somebody Else's Head, looking at corruption and now solutions to corruption. This is a wonderful topic. So we're coming back in just a moment to consider that. Don't go far away. Thinking with Somebody Else's Head on our Stop Radio Network. We are streaming through iTunes. We have a couple of places you can find this on websites, too, at healingthroughconsciousness.com and our Stop Radio website, stopradio.org, and coming in many, many different ways. I was saying to Claudia just before we began our show that when Dr. Kepi's work becomes mainstream, then there's going to be an enormous search for where we can find out more information about him. And I just want you to know, you who are listening, you leading edge people, that this is available now and really needs to be spread out to more people. So please feel free to do that. That would be wonderful for you to do that. Claudia wrote a book not that long ago.
I have been researching on the subject for a long time. The book I wrote was in more or less, well, it's around 2000.
Okay, yeah. So 12 years. That's
so it's
on.
Like the inauguration of this third millennium. So it has been, we are now in the fourth edition of the book, and I'm adding some.
Good. Yeah. And the book called The Secret History of Brazil. It's only in Portuguese at this stage, but I can assure you.
Millennium and the Universal Man is the subtitle of the book.
Right. And the Millennium is the name of our language school.
Yeah.
And
we
have a big link with this esoteric knowledge that you bring through this book. So give us a bit of a sense of why you want to bring that
because
up here now.
Because dealing with universals, we see that this ideal society, You can call it utopia, you can call it third millennium, you can call it the golden age, you can call it...
Age of Aquarius. The fifth empire.
By some. It's an universal concept, and some people like felt and are feeling some enormous changes are about to happen. Some people call it apocalypse. And some groups are afraid that God might punish the humanity in this planet and bring an enormous catastrophe and the elimination of three-fourths of humanity.
The rapture, is this the...
Rapture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some think, well... And some don't. They see that there will be a transformation. There will be an entrance in another level of consciousness and another energetic dimension of consciousness. So there are many, many theories. But there are some points that are common to all of those theories. And this is like an idea that one day... we will have a better place to live, a kind of a going back to the previous paradise or recovering what we lost thousands and thousands of years ago. And so everybody has this concept of a fair, beautiful, developed world, peaceful, with where all the peoples would come together and have a decent human society to live. So some say there will be Muslims all over the world. Some say there will be Catholics. Some say there will be Christians. Some say
Chinese.
There will be Chinese or Russian, Hindu. Some say there will be Jews, the Jewish kingdom. But we can say that God is infinite in his love and the way he deals with his children. And he sees all human beings as his children. And so the way God sees things, there are no sectors or sectarian attitudes.
Yeah, this
in
is
here.
The universal aspect you were talking about, yes.
And what he meant when he sent his prophets and his messengers and his son is that if you do good, if you are good, if you accept good, beauty, and truth, if you live a life in accordance to the essence he gave us, so all peoples would come together in peace, and he will be the only God for all. So all these fights, this is my church, my prophet, my ideas, has nothing to do with God. His kingdom is a universal kingdom. And this is how we understand. But this doesn't include, for sure, men and spirits and angels that are against goodness, beauty, and truth. One cannot understand a kingdom that is a mixture of good and evil. This would be something that we are living now. But not...
hardly a kingdom, right?
Hardly a kingdom, because the kingdom of these demons and devils and criminals and psychopaths and these negative human beings is a kingdom of destruction, of distortion, denial, of all these good qualities of the true kingdom. So we speak about now a true society. We would say, so a little bit of a dishonesty or some dishonesty and some honesty, some aggression and some tolerance,
yeah, yes.
Some racial problems and some
harmony.
No, it's there.
Mostly harmony, but a little bit of...
Yeah. So what would be of the planet if we would not have this kind of dialectics of good and evil, shadow and light? So this is a mistake, because evil, disease, sickness, aggression, criminality, all problems, all pathologies, They don't exist by themselves. They are the denial, the distortion, the absence of what is really truthful, what is really true, what is really real. Therefore, we work in this direction. We work in this direction of accepting everything from all cultures, all religions that are in accordance to that. And this is possible, Richard, you know? This is very possible.
I believe this too.
If people conscientize what is denial, what is pathology, so they can correct themselves, each one of us, we can reach that plateau, or this level of development.
In beauty, goodness, and truth, we are all welcome, right? And we're all, I mean, this is what you say is so obvious. I mean, really, it's amazing that we don't see this today because it's so clear.
Because we are inverted. Yeah. We are, as Kepi says, unconscious of our pathology, our envy, our theomania, our greediness, our pathologies. So we are unconscious of this. And he created a method where people can do this through analysis, for individual analysis, through reading, through watching our programs. So there are means. He created a scientific method for us to know better ourselves and to understand and to become conscious of what is unconscious in us, the pathologies and the sanity, which is still unconscious in us.
Yeah, because if the sanity is the basis of everything, then all of the craziness we see is just the destruction of that sanity, right? It's somehow the denial of it in some way.
So Malachi Martin, this well-known exorcist, Jesuit, writer, academic, he studied a lot about ancient scriptures and about theology and philosophy. He was in the latter years and interviews, he used to say, all of us can sense that there is something coming, a big change. And as it is alien to everybody, we don't know what is going to happen exactly. People sometimes get afraid. So they created this idea of 2012. And I was reading my book the other day, and I was like, okay, so I wrote about something important that I forgot, that the Gregorian calendar is behind the true calendar 7 years. And when they noticed this, they realized this a long time ago, they decided not to change because this would create such a mess in history.
The Gregorian calendar is the one we use now.
Yeah.
But it's 7 years away from the true calendar.
Yeah. It's behind.
So we're not in 2012 at all.
No.
We're what, 2019?
Yes. So the true 2012 was in 2005.
But that doesn't mean I'm 7 years older than I am.
No.
Okay.
No.
But that's incredible.
It is that you if you are in the right calendar, then you would have your age in 2019.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, so now I wonder, this calculation of 2012, did it take into consideration the mistake of Gregorian calendar?
Ah, Claudia, I love talking with you. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like we're thinking with the Gregorian calendar head,
yeah,
which is 7 years out of date.
Yes, and it's totally
random,
not in synchony with the
in resonance with the
Mayan
truth
calendar. So, they decided 2012 would be the year for them to do something. The powerful decided that. So they started to use this date as something for their purposes. I don't know exactly what they want to do in 2012, what they had in mind, but we still are like feeling that some big change is taking place, independently from what these powerful people can say, state or not. We feel that. We can feel that.
Yeah.
So this feeling that there is a big change going on, Richard, is still unconscious for many. As you said, there is this official consciousness of the world, which is mostly the media and the mainstream representatives.
Yeah.
But this doesn't mean that in the unconscious of everybody, and even in the conscious level of everybody, something is being, like, something is happening. A change is taking place. And many don't understand what it is, where does this come from, but the resonance and the resonant effect and energetic, in an energetic level, is absolutely scientific. So you see people thinking in a similar vibration and with similar concepts all over the world. People from the Indians and then the Chinese and then the Russians and then the people in the United States, in Canada, in Brazil, all over. People now are starting to realize that the status quo cannot continue.
Yeah.
As it is.
Yeah.
The status quo doesn't feed our necessities. So something must change.
Yeah.
Something must change.
You said just at the end of the program last time, if we don't replace egoism, selfishness with altruism, greed with generosity, competition with cooperation, we will never be happy or healthy or have a developed world.
Yeah. So what are we going, or what are we doing? Besides our scientific work, besides our work of psychoanalysts and scientists and writers and researchers and giving courses and having our postgraduate courses and short courses and cultural, psychotherapeutic TV programs and radio programs, we have a project. And this project is Cambuquira Project. Cambuquira is the name of this small village in the mountains where we made our real campus, university campus.
Yeah, it's our application of Dr. Kepi's theories.
Where we apply Dr. Kepi's discoveries and theories in the socio-economic level. So we are dealing with a very poor, forgotten, but immersed in a natural environment village where we can be of help for those people and bringing the most advanced science in the world for them. And people say, but how can we construct this village as an embryo for a future better society? One of the things that I tell them is that constructing the world of the future is mostly going back to the past and recovering all the good things that were left behind, starting from medicine, using natural herbs, natural treatments, natural resources as one of the main means to recover health. Not only that, but recovering a more natural way of being, more humane, more affectionate, giving more importance to feelings and cooperation and brotherhood and work and good work and ethics. So recovering the good values is something very important.
Helping
even
other constructed, people.
Yeah. Even yeah. Constructions. You see that now the permaculture movement, they use things that were used like thousands of years ago and were considered backwarded kind of things.
It's so funny, isn't it?
Yeah. So we go to Indian cultures and we go to the very, very ancient civilizations
yeah.
to recover.
Primitive, yeah.
The primitive, the so-called primitive civilizations, so-called. To learn with them. Like we lost the technique of these Templars of building huge cathedrals with just stones. And they don't know anymore how to do that.
Yeah.
So we have so many ways to recover what is, like, we have in around the areas a lot of stones, like, pedras, how do you say this?
Stones, exactly.
Stones.
Yeah.
So people, in the past, they construct homes.
Of these beautiful rock. And,
well.
Yeah, incredible.
And they are, like, very much, they serve to be like a equilibrium for the external heat or cold.
Right. Never gets too hot, never gets
yeah.
too cold.
Yeah. So this kind
insulated. It's a natural insulation.
Yes.
Natural.
And they are there for centuries. They are so much sustainable kind of... Yep. of but, you know, to have profits, you cannot build and do sustainable things. Otherwise, they will last, and you will have no profits any longer. So you need to do homes that are they burn, like just wood, they burn.
Or they rot, or they something.
So you can have more profits, and profits, and profits, and money, and money. And what are we going to do with so much money? Trillions of dollars and all this currencies that worth nothing for our life.
Let me just tell you, listening, that our projects here are really beautiful, and you can find out more about them on our sites and by just writing to me if you want more information.
Yeah, it's better to write because we don't have that much thing already in our sites.
Yeah, we're improving.
And we are idealizing a way so people can come and spend the time and having like a scholarship for our free university. And having a place to stay and food and accommodation, and they learn our science and they do like labor work even. We need people to build a city.
And my email address is jones@stop.org.br. Any further information you would like is available there. Kepi's work, on top of outlining the problems of the human being in society, how we got into this mess, also gives us very practical solutions to get us out. It's compelling stuff. So we don't anymore just point our fingers out at the problem, but keep one eye turned inward to focus on our participation, consciously or unconsciously, in the elaboration of our sick society and what we can do in practice to rescue it. Thinking with Somebody Else's Head is proud to stream on the Stop Radio Network. I'm Richard Lloyd-Jones. Thanks for listening.